The Daily Buzz is made possible with support from Studio Movie Grill, opening hearts and minds one story at a time. A trip to SMG is unlike any other entertainment experience. Whether you come early or stay late, we'll set the mood for a great night to socialize and connect with an immersive movie-going experience. And independent filmmakers, you can four-wall your film or find a home at the many film festivals they host in their 30 locations across the country. And Onward, a search-driven brand experience agency. In today's heads-down society, people crave relevance, emotional connection, and honest information. Our pioneering search-first process delivers the credible insights for informed marketing communications. You're listening to The Daily Buzz on kcpw.org, moviecitynews.com, and You Offend Me, You Offend My Family. This is day two. I'm John Wildman, and we are on location in Park City, Utah, at the 2018 Sundance Film Festival. We're coming to you from Slam Dance headquarters on historic Main Street, interviewing some of the year's most important and exciting voices in the independent film world. Joining me this morning are my co-hosts, Minji Chang and Lanzia Wan. Today, we will be talking about the Sundance films, Anote's Ark and White Rabbit, and have a conversation with Salt Lake City Weekly's Scott Renshaw about what it's like as a journalist when your local hometown film festival is Sundance and Slam Dance, and the pressure you feel being on a film jury with awards and career boosts hanging in the balance. You are listening to The Daily Buzz on kcpw.org, moviecitynews.com, and You Offend Me, You Offend My Family. My name is John Wildman. I'm here with my co-host, Minji Chang. And right now we're going to do a little insider segment with Scott Renshaw from the Salt Lake City Weekly, and who's also a Slam Dance juror this year, yes?
Yes.
Okay.
For the shorts.
Oh, for the shorts.
Ooh.
Okay. All right. Well, let's start off with this. I do a number of film festivals across the country, and when you are local, a local journalist covering a film festival, you know, there you have different things you have to do as opposed to what a national journalist has. This, of course, Slam Dance, Sundance are huge film festivals. They happen to also be your local film festival.
Yeah.
So what is that like for you covering this film festival?
Well,
or festivals.
Yeah. I mean, I certainly think that to a certain extent, I hope that for the local attendees, and that's part of what makes this unique, is the Utah locals have a chance to embrace this as something that's theirs as well. And because there are so many Utah locals that buy their local passes and they have their screenings down in Salt Lake City where they have three or four films in a certain slot and they're wondering, what can I see? Well, that's hopefully what I'm serving as well, as being on Twitter like every journalist has to be now and telling a national audience what I think. It's also letting those who are making decisions about what to see with their local pass, which of the three or four options that they have is might be the best one for them.
Okay. Well, now, how do you personally approach it?
Well, I mean, this is my 21st year.
Wow.
And most of them credentialed, not all of them. I've been with City Weekly for almost 20 years now. And I mean, I think that there are things that anyone who's been here long enough does, where they are listening to their colleagues that they trust when there are choices that they have to make in their own schedule about what to see. You know, certain filmmakers perhaps that you have your eye on. But I mean, the thing about Sundance every year and Slam Dance and festivals like this, which are so focused on emerging first-time filmmakers, is it's a crapshoot. You just you can't be sure what it is you're going to get, and that can make for some fascinating discoveries. So everyone is guessing. Everyone is guessing all the time about when they have their 15 different films showing at any given time slot, which one is the best one. And all I try to do is maintain my sanity and my ability to stay awake during all these things and respect the filmmakers enough that I can say something about it that makes sense after doing three or four films a day for 10 days.
Right. Well, I mean, you have been doing three or four films. You have I'm certain have been able to preview some stuff.
Yes.
That the rest of us haven't. So throw a couple titles at me. What should Minji and I check out as soon as we finish the show?
I'm dying to know.
Well, the things that I actually have had a chance to see yet, there were those that were yesterday, and then there are some that the publicists do make available a little bit early under the condition that I don't say anything about them until the people have had a chance to see them. So I can't cheat that and burn my bridge there. I was able to see the new documentary, the world documentary yesterday, Our New President, which is about the Russian media efforts to kind of persuade their own people and perhaps by extension others, and that has some fascinating material in it, some really jaw-dropping stuff from how the Russian media told its people about who would be the best president and why, about this scrappy young kid from Brooklyn named Donald Trump, who is an underdog makes good story, and all of these kinds of wonderful things. So I think that's one that's certainly going to have some traction, even though it's in a category that a lot of people might not pay attention to as much as the premieres or the U.S. competition films.
Okay. All right. Now, you're also a juror.
Mm-hmm.
And you're a juror for a short film category.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen all of them yet?
Yes, I have.
Okay. All right. And how many did you have to watch?
26.
Oh, wow.
That's a lot. All right. So 26 short films. For you, how did you go up? Because I've been on a jury before. Mm-hmm. And there is, there's that kind of palpable sense of responsibility that you have. So what has this experience been like for you so far?
Absolutely. I mean, the only equivalent I've really had is working with at the University of Utah. They had a student film program, and they invited me to this. But this is the first thing of this. Magnitude might be an exaggeration, but you know that this matters to the people involved. And not that, when you review a film, it doesn't matter, but you have to take it seriously. You have to respect what a filmmaker is trying to do, try to engage it on the terms that they are trying to present it. And most importantly, again, it's the same thing at a film festival in general, is you're trying to keep things straight in your head when you have so much information coming at you. And so you're trying to take really good notes so that when you gather with your fellow jurors, you're not looking going, wait a minute, which one is that one again? And, that's not to be disrespectful to anyone. They might have made a really wonderful movie, but it just starts all to get clouded. So you really try to do your best to make sure that you know what you're talking about when you get in that room, because that's the job you've taken on, and you want to be respectful.
Yeah, because somebody's going to get a sparky because of this.
Exactly.
So, so that's important. Well, here's what I would love for you to address. Again, I've been on juries before, and oftentimes when you're in that situation, you come up with the dilemma of what is purely the best film versus what film is really good that could really benefit from the bump, the push that this award could get. Have you thought about that?
Oh, I'd be lying if I said I didn't. When you're a member of a film critics group, like many local areas do, we have a Utah film critics group, and there would be a situation where I would say, okay, this may or may not be my favorite of this year, but this is why I think it would be amazing to have this out there as a winner. And that's there. You have to be honest enough with yourself to say that that's why a lot of people who are voting for awards, whether it's Academy Awards or Film Festival Awards, they may be choosing to make a statement. Now, people on the outside might look at that and go, that's terrible. You should just vote for the film that you think is best. And ideally, those two things overlap. But you also know that there might be something that could, you could give someone a platform that they wouldn't otherwise have, and that perhaps this is going to have, something that might be more conventional might be able to get more traction more easily in other ways, whereas something that's very unusual, think let's give this a extra boost that it might need.
I think that's a really wonderful way to put it in terms of providing somebody a platform, and the thing that you're saying that you're local to Utah, so you get to experience these two really amazing film festivals that in the grander scope of the film world have such significance for these filmmakers. And I actually heard from a little bird earlier today that Christopher Nolan got a short film in Slam Dance. So, there's so much history. And Sundance, I mean, we could go on for days about the filmmakers who have come through that. I'm curious, in your 21 years of being, having the experience of all these festivals growing, what's the evolution been like? What have you seen change in the growth? And it's certainly changed a lot, I'm sure, in that two decades.
A lot of it has to do with I mean, it's not as simple as what is a movie, but you even look at what Sundance has done with adding the episodic category this year, and you realize that people are asking these questions all the time now. Is something that is on Netflix a movie in the same way that something is in theaters a movie? Is, you know, how do short films fit into that? And so there's a constant evolution of when we talk about a film festival, what does that mean? What is it addressing? And you have virtual reality and you have, you know, so many things which they're cinematic in their way. So that certainly has been part of it. And then just the pure change of the number of people who are here in a small mountain town trying to deal with that from an infrastructure standpoint. And it gets, you know, crazier and bigger every year. And that, you know, when there are years or days when I'm commuting back up and down the mountain from Salt Lake City, then you realize it's a weird thing to go, you know, 45 minutes down that mountain. It's just people doing their normal lives. And then suddenly it's, you know, all of these people here.
Celebrities.
And yeah, it's hoopla and fanfare and movies and parties. And
people about
skiing and snowboarding too.
One of the comparisons I made years ago was, I, you know, when you're sitting at like a pro sports draft and you have someone sitting there going, their name could be called and that could change their life forever at that moment. And suddenly they're on a bigger stage than they ever were before. And you can be there for that. And I think that's really kind of amazing.
It is. And again, somebody's going to get a Sparky because of you.
Yes.
Okay. Again, we've been talking with Scott Renshaw of the Salt Lake City Weekly, and this year, a Slam Dance juror. Thank you for being with us, Scott.
Thanks very much for having me.
Back on the Daily Buzz. My name is John Wildman. I'm here with my co-host Minji Chang. And now we're going to talk about the film Anote's Ark, which is in the World Cinema Documentary Competition at Sundance. We have with us the director, Matthew Ritz, and the film's subject, Anote Tong. A lot to talk about with this documentary, with this film. Matthew, why don't you lead us off by introducing the audience to what the film is about?
Hey, so the film is really about the people of Kiribati and the nation of Kiribati that is under threat of vanishing during in this next century. So it's really a character-driven movie following two main characters, the president Anote Tong and Sarah Marie, which is a woman, mother of six, that's had to move to New Zealand. And it's a story about climate justice and adaptation and how Kiribati people will adapt to the new situation.
Well, I think is one of the things that is fascinating about this is that as we talk about the you know, the issues with climate change, with global warming, with issues like that, oftentimes it's an academic conversation to a lot of people because you're going, well, it doesn't affect me. It's too bad about polar bears that, you know, well, you know, then things like that. This is one of the situations where you've captured, you know, in a film where you're showing how people are severely, directly affected by what is happening. And can you talk about, one, why you took this on as a subject, and then how you approached it?
I took it as a subject because I was very intrigued by the relationship between land and people and what the culture and what the spirituality becomes when you lose land forever. And I think President Tong is very articulate about all the question of climate change, but bringing in Sarah Marie makes a difference also because we can really follow her life and the transformation and people can rely to her because she's a mother. At the end of the movie, she gives birth to a newborn and they have, you know, they bring it this question of now are you a Kiwi, a New Zealander, a Kiribati? So all those questions about, you know, identities, we all concerned to that. So it's not anymore just like very, theories about climate change and scientific, you know, projection. It's about us as human.
And Anote Tong, you're at the center of this in so many ways. It's one thing to be at the center of something like this that happens that many of us could not even imagine, literally the land disappearing beneath our feet. But you're also now the subject. You have cameras trained on you, and while you're dealing with this, can you talk about the experience of, you know, beyond what we see in the film, of having Matthew, have his cameras trained on you through this process?
Well, I'm precisely that, the subject of the film and hardly the center of the issue. I think what's got to be understood is the what is at the center of all of this is the issue of climate change. And my part has been to try to humanize the process, because even when Vice President Al Gore was dealing with the issue, it was more directed at the developed society. But it never focused on the victims, apart from the polar bears. And so it was my task to say, no, it's not only about the polar bears. It's about us and the other side of the world. And we are equally threatened, perhaps even more. And so when Matthew got involved, and as I said, I'm simply the subject because I didn't know what Matthew was doing. He was simply capturing what I was doing. And I'm not acting in the film. I'm just doing the job that I decided to go ahead and do. And so my real hope is that this film will contribute to the advocacy, will contribute to the debate, hopefully to continue to convey the message to people, a message that not only needs to be heard, but needs to be acted upon. And I think that is the point. It's got to be acted upon. It's not an academic issue for us. It is a matter of survival. And that's not being truly appreciated yet.
I think there were so many powerful messages that were obviously that can be told in a documentary like this to show the destruction and to show the power of climate change and what it's doing it to people's homes, to livelihoods, to sustainability, and then to see the human experience about preserving culture and everything like that. And that was extremely powerful. And I think, Anote, you had some really amazing words of just raw emotion and not just the academia, but just as you as a person, as a person of this land and these are your people. And there, I want to like do spoilers, but there are just some really beautiful gems, I think, that could really hit anybody in the heart about being home, you know, and what this is doing to home. And also the imagery, I think, since the documentary has been made, I'm just curious as to how your work has changed in terms of the reception when you have these things to say now, in light of all of, even within this last year, of what's been happening around the world and domestically here in the United States. You know, there's a lot of does it fall in the same deaf ears? Are people more compassionate? Is there more action?
Okay. Well, what I'd like to share is perhaps the experience that I had when I started the whole process on this journey. When I started talking at the United Nations General Assembly about this, nobody listened. Nobody paid any attention. There was the focus on terrorism, but nothing about what climate change was doing. And so I kept trying to convince people. It was a slow process, painfully slow for me. But eventually there was a gathering of momentum I managed to convince the Secretary General of the United Nations to visit Kiribati, following which he saw and felt what it was to be in a situation that we live on a daily basis with. And so he came back with a totally different perspective, and I think he was inspired and galvanized into more action. And this is what I've been trying to do. You know, challenge, shame, inspire people. And I guess the conclusion of the Paris Agreement was a landmark achievement, but it's a piece of paper. We must never forget that it's a piece of paper. And unless and until we can do something that is concrete, that is credible, that will actually address the challenges that we are facing and will face into the future, it really has no effect. And so the job is not done. We have to face the reality of delving into our comfort zone so that others can have a chance to survive.
Well, you know, sometimes we're fortunate on the Daily Buzz to have guests. Of course, we have wonderful filmmakers, but often, sometimes we are fortunate to have someone like yourself, Anote, that I'm just floored by and just grateful to be able to have you speak. Anote Tong, thank you for being here. Matthew Ritz, congratulations on the film.
Thank you so much.
Again, the title is Anote's Ark. It is in the World Cinema Documentary Competition at Sundance. Thank you both for being here.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And welcome back to The Daily Buzz. I'm your host, Minji Chang. And today we are sitting down with the director and some of the cast members of White Rabbit, which is premiering at Sundance Film Festival in the next category. We have director Daryl Wine, Vivian Bang, who's the lead actress, and Nana Gana, who's the supporting actress. Welcome to The Daily Buzz.
Thank you for having us.
How has everything been? I actually really would love to hand things off to Daryl so that he can fill us in on what White Rabbit is about.
Okay, sure. Hi, everybody. White Rabbit is about a Korean-American performance artist who is trying to find her place in the world through her multiple identities. And in the film, she meets the amazing Nana Gana, whose character is Victoria, another artist in L.A. And the film is about seeking connection and intersectionality and raising issues about identity and who we are in this current political climate.
Very cool. I think that's a very timely piece, and it's really humorous. It's amazing. By the way, I want to congratulate all of you because it's just, I relate to it very much so for my own personal reasons, being Korean-American. And Vivian, I think it's a very bold film, and just in like the specificity of the jokes and the humor, because not everyone's going to necessarily know what mukbang is and things like that. And I was just curious about the process of how that story was written and developed over time to be this final piece.
Yeah, so I think I created a performance piece, which Daryl saw, and that's, you know, the piece was called Can You Hear Me? And he heard me. Mm. So after that, you know, we collaborated to sort of talk about this artist's life. And I think this piece, mukbang videos, or, you know, in improv dancing, or, you know, whatever it is, it's about wanting to be heard, to be seen authentically, you know. And it's very rare, especially in this modern world where everything's sort of like reduced to a soundbite, you know, to be authentically seen for your multiple identities. And so I think with the videos, it was just about, okay, so she, you know, she does these public, the life of a performance artist. I don't know if you know much about like the performance art world, but it's very unglorified, you know, world. There's not much monetary value. It's not like a piece of art that you can hang in a gallery or sell. So a lot of it is just, you know, trying to be heard and finding your audience and trying to get your message across, you know, in these multi-platform, you know, multidisciplinary ways. And so mukbang video was just one of the platforms that she's trying to access. And, you know, she's kind of making fun of herself too about consumption and how we're addicted to sugar and snacks.
It was amazing. The powdered sugar imagery is always going to be that face, that shot. And Nana, you guys, you and Vivian have these great interactions, and the first time you meet is amazing. It's just, the fight is epic. And I'm just curious because, like you said, intersectionality, you know, that's actually a term that maybe in Los Angeles, New York is something that's more and more commonly heard and discussed, but you don't get to see it play out. And that's, you want to make sure that the project reflects that. Nana, I was wondering how you felt about when you approached the project, you saw the script, you saw that the first conversation that you two have. How was that jumping into this project for you?
It was definitely, you know, coming into the project was a very exciting moment to get the call from Daryl and to, you know, to be part of a film that is putting two women of color on screen and exploring their relationship in the modern day was really intriguing to me. And Vivian is, I mean, just watching her, I knew about her performance art before we got to work on the film. In fact, she would pop up on my feed, and but I think it was really cool to really explore what was behind her character, like what was behind the artist. And I think that what was interesting about our relationship on screen was, you know, the confusion and the projection that we put on people when we first come together and in our experience. So that process I enjoyed a lot.
That's wonderful. Daryl, I'm curious, as a director, you know, you're in the next category at Sundance. How does that feel for you, and especially working in this specific project and this topic at this time, you know, with this climate?
Dope.
In a word.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. It's amazing, you know. Sundance champions progressive work and forward-thinking art, and to be put in that category is so gratifying and fulfilling, and I'm just happy to raise awareness about issues that don't always get out into the mainstream and work with these two amazing women who I absolutely love, and finding these really interesting nuanced moments and trying to elevate subtlety, you know, like that we're in this age of Marvel movies and a lot of movies that really want to hammer things over the head and lots of action sequences, so many. Yes. And I'm like, let's just have two women talking and trying to figure themselves out and, you know, colliding in this interesting way. It's been an amazing journey to work with both of them and blend this kind of this fictional world that we've created with some nonfiction. As Vivian was saying, you know, the authenticity and specificity of White Rabbit, I think is what really is, it was a main focus for us. And I think that hopefully will speak to people.
Yeah, it's like, even though she's so weird or specific, you know, maybe it's not, you know, maybe the performance art world is not something that everyone has access to. But the more you're like actually real about something, you know, in the details, no matter how alienating it can be, that's what makes something very human. You know, that's how people can recognize themselves, even though it's not a world that they know. I had so many people come up to me after the premiere, just people, you know, so touched by this film. And I was surprised because I thought, oh, God, you know, performance art can be a very annoying term. You know, people have their assumptions about it and, you know, that it can be very indulgent. And I didn't think that all these people would relate so much, you know, about this journey.
I think, and that credits the team in terms of what realness you brought to the table, the authenticity, the vulnerability. I think that's a really beautiful element to this film. So congratulations to all of you for putting together this wonderful piece to share with the world. And again, we are sitting down with Daryl Wine, the director of White Rabbit, and cast members Vivian Vang and Nana Ghana. You'll see this at Sundance Film Festival in the next category. And thank you so much for being here.
# White Rabbit Motion Picture.
That's right, baby.
White Rabbit. Follow the White Rabbit.
Follow.
Sundance, baby.
And we're wrapping up day two of The Daily Buzz on kcpw.org, moviecitynews.com, and You Offend Me, You Offend My Family. This show is made possible with the support of KCPW and Slamdance Film Festival. Our sponsor, Studio Movie Grill, which is opening hearts and minds one story at a time, and Onward, a search-driven brand experience agency. Additional support is provided by Movie City News, The Market in Park City, Ruby Snap, and City Cakes. Our producer is Lancia Wan.